Welcome to The Big Show. Yes, it's The Big Show. We're back. We've got a new setup. There's a new version of Wirecast since the last time I was on Mac and it failed. So hopefully we're going to get through a full episode. If we don't tonight, then write to your MP because there's sod all else I can do about it. Talking of MPs, joining me, fantastic panel to start us off with the week's technology news, the one story that we're actually going to cover. Top left, Charlotte Henry. How are you doing, girl?
Hello, good evening. Hello. Nice to see you all.
What have you been up to then since last week?
Since last... Oh, it's been a bit manic, actually. We've done a few... We've done a lot of the David Miranda stuff, and we're going to have some of that stuff up on the Mac Observer when I get round to writing it. And I've covered it already on the blog. So that's been quite the big story this week. Issues around the NSA surveillance data, Guardian journalists being picked up at airports, very Bourne-style...
Not good at all. I was joking today that after last week's Mac show, I got an email from Graham who said I was a misogynist. So I thought I'd invite you on just to prove I didn't hate women.
Why are you a misogynist?
I don't know. Graham said I was a misogynist, so I just wanted to put the record straight.
Oh, no.
So there we go.
What an odd criticism of you.
It is. No, absolutely. I did say that I'd have given into a sexist one, but criticism, but not misogynist. Unbelievable. I was saying on the Mac show today, we had a bit of a contentious issue last week on the Mac show, which got rather heated, and I got more letters than I've ever got before. I got 10 emails saying I was right, I got 3 emails saying I was wrong, and I got 14 emails just calling me names.
And
They never actually made a point either way.
And I've linked to it in a post in the Mac Observer that's going up.
Oh, no, I'm going to get more hate
mail. So you can all be send more rude letters to me when it goes up.
It has germinated a bit of a thick skin on me. next to Charlotte, Jeff Gamet, sporting a beard. Look at you, Bear.
Well, sorry, I ran out of time and couldn't shave today.
Is it you've grown that in a day?
No, like 3. So it's not like I was overachieving.
I've been growing a beard for nearly a year, and I haven't got that much now.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll shave for next time so that you don't feel intimidated.
You're taking
this. I'm showing.
You're taking this mountain man thing to heart, aren't you?
Well, some days, yeah.
Good man.
You know, be glad I took a shower today.
It suits you. It really suits you, pal. Excellent. Beneath him, it's Paul from Norwich. How you doing, mate?
Hello, sir. It's the beard show, then, isn't it?
It is. We are. Hey, yeah. Only Charlotte is without beard, and she could probably grow on faster than me.
And it would look.
I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
Oh, mate, I grow beard. I grow facial hair like a 3-month-old baby. It's not good. How you doing, mate?
All right, mate. Yeah, I've had a day off today, so. Fantastic.
That's why you look relaxed. Exactly. BT Infinity coming.
Yes, thank God.
To your village.
Yes, 0.74 up. I'm fed up with that.
No need to entertain yourself with your sister anymore.
Oh, my sister lives in London, so she's safe.
I know you people in Norwich.
Yeah, I know people in Norwich. And birthday salutations, sir.
Yeah, and you, mate. You were a couple of days before me, weren't you?
I was, yeah. It's been a great week.
Ah, now then. And last, but my name is least Tom.
Tom.
Who's got the volume up there?
What's happening now?
Charlotte, get some bloody headphones, woman.
Why is not me?
I hate women that haven't got headphones. Thomas, how the devil are you?
I am wondering how it was that you knew Steve Ballmer would announce his retirement on Friday and move the big show.
Yeah, there you go. You see, that's what
incredible.
It's that sixth sense of journalistic insight that I've gathered over the years of listening to you.
Cat-like. Wait, no, I don't think that's the right metaphor, but no. Something.
Now then, Tom. Amazing. Tom, when's your birthday? What month?
June.
See.
Good people.
I did a survey last Saturday. I was a bit drunk, I have to admit, but. I said, because in our little sphere of people that talk regularly on Twitter, I noticed a lot of people were saying, it's their birthday. And I said, all geeks, not all, clearly, but June, July, August, big geek months. And 90% of the people that are in our little clique that are geeks, they're late birthdays in the
no kidding.
In the school year. June, July, August.
Oh.
There you go. And it really was, wasn't it? I retweeted everyone that tweeted in, whether it was in or out, and 90% of the people tweeted back with a June to August birthday.
Oh, winter, isn't it?
That means September through November is when their parents were active.
Yeah, that's it.
It's cold.
But there you go.
And I'm a January baby, so
that means
that my parents were getting jiggy with it around April Fool's Day.
That's not a picture you need,
which
though,
is totally
dude.
Appropriate.
That's not a picture you need.
You seem no, so much no, like a not. June See, to August
This is why I dream.
Jeff.
Mate, you've been going on about this and your parents and whether they actually had you, whether you were a real baby or not, for weeks now.
I think I was genetically engineered. I'm a clone.
Of Grizzly Adams. The Week in Tech. Well, stuff the Week in Tech. Let's just talk about the last 2.5 hours. Steve Ballmer has announced his imminent retirement in 12 months' time from Microsoft. The big bald dude who jumps like a monkey is definitely going. There is a period of transition, in quotes, and I think I did talk to Chris Forsman earlier in the day, and I postulated that was due to the fact that Microsoft purchasing can't order a chair any faster than that. So, I mean, the Ballmer going, I think there was someone tweeted out that the stock price went up after the announcement. Which I think is a bit harsh.
Quite a bit.
And the one thing I was going to say was, I mean, you know, first impressions, thumbs up, thumbs down for Ballmer. In order. Let's go around the panel and just do a quick, you know, yay or nay on whether he's been a positive or a negative for Microsoft. Charlotte?
Negative.
On what basis, though? Quickly. I don't want to spend ages doing this little round robin, but...
Well, I just don't think he's brought the company forward. I don't think... The products have really shaken up the marketplace in any way, and I don't think he's produced anything. He's led his company to do anything that scared their competitors.
Okay, fair point, Jeffrey. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs down. He was negative. He is a marketing guy that doesn't know how to. Doesn't have the vision for the technology that. And the products that they need to really move forward. They need someone that gets how the market works and gets what people really want. And that just wasn't his strong point.
What about you, Paul?
Thumbs up. I think he's a nut. And he's a homer when he took over his brother's car company, I think. He's quite a personality. And there are very few of those kind of things where you see keynotes and things and... Microsoft were going to go the way they were going to go, but he's a used car salesman and Dodge, one of the most powerful companies in the world. Good luck to him.
Okay. I'm not sure why that's a positive, but thank you.
It's a positive. We're missing so many personalities in technology business now. He was a personality. And I think with him gone, then there's less personality.
Okay. And Tom?
Certainly in the short term for the stock market, he's a positive. I'm looking right now, it's up at 7.58% on the news. I think overall he's a positive for Microsoft. It, maybe not the best case scenario, because all of the criticisms that Charlotte and Jeffrey said are absolutely true. But when you look at the number of software companies that were around when he took over in January 2000 and compare them to which ones are gone, acquired, or just aren't faring well at all. Microsoft's still profitable. It's still gargantuan. And we forget as consumers that on the enterprise side, they are still dominant.
Yeah.
So he has kept Microsoft in a cruise control. He brought along the Xbox under his stewardship as CEO, which had been a big hit against everybody's recommendations. It hasn't been a success as a search engine so much as been a success as a platform and an API for enterprise. If anything, he failed to have the vision to take Microsoft above and beyond, but they certainly didn't sink. So I'd call that a net positive.
Yeah, my point would be about Ballmer, being as I've got the casting vote, that he seems to have evolved a more diverse company than when he took over. Because, I mean, Gates stepped away in 2006 almost completely. So at that point, there was an OS and there was an Xbox. And I mean, now, you know, they're in the mobile field. He's engineered the synergy with Nokia, the Skype purchase, that kind of stuff. He's developed...
Did you really just say synergy?
Synergy. And it is a good
Across
synergy.
Across platforms?
A synergy, definitely. I mean, I've had the Nokia N25 for the last couple of weeks on review, and it is good. I've enjoyed it very much.
Does it create a new paradigm?
If I knew what paradigm meant, I'd be able to answer that, but I don't.
Leverage.
No, it's... I think he's developed a more diverse Microsoft. Now, whether that's his influence or whether that's the fact that people that beneath him have just kind of got on with it and ignored anything he had to say, I don't know. But, I mean, would you say that Microsoft is more diverse now or not?
They're catching up with the competition, aren't they? They got left behind.
Yeah, it's definitely more diverse than it was.
I mean, it's still the world's leading OS.
Oh, yeah, and it will be for a long time. I mean, Microsoft is a very big ship. And it's you don't turn something that big on a dime, and you don't change its market share overnight. So, yeah, Microsoft is very big. Steve Ballmer has been at the helm when some good things have happened for the company. I just think overall, he doesn't have the vision that Microsoft needs. And it's been time, I think, for a while for fresh blood at the top. Someone that's better suited to make Microsoft the bigger success that it's capable of being.
I mean, what's the, you know, if you look at the fact that, you know, there is a mobile operating system which is very functional and very doable and working on a good platform, the Metro interface, who's the person that said, right, we need a new UI? Who's the person that said we need to climb into bed with Nokia or a mobile provider? Who said we need a Surface tablet? Who said we need a purchase of Skype? I mean, those things are done with thought in mind. They're not done just by, you know, what should we do today? I've got $8 million burning on my pocket, right. $1 billion.
Right, but then you also have who is it that said, let's come up with a revolutionary new way of presenting an interface, user interface to people, and then followed it up with, and let's make it the one thing for everyone, even though it won't work right on every device. One of Microsoft's problems is that they've always done they go for the one ring. It's one OS to rule them all, and it doesn't matter if it's the brand new novice user, the high-end IT manager, if it's on your phone, if it's on your laptop, if it's on your tablet, they want one OS to rule them all. And that's not that's not the way to do it. And if you look at the interface formerly known as Metro, I think it's great on a smartphone. And I think it's great on a smartphone. When you scale up to a tablet, it's kind of meh. Because it just doesn't fit as well on that bigger screen. When you take it to the desktop, total fail, I think. Do not think Metro scales up to the desktop at all. The first time I saw it at CES, and they're waxing poetic about this beta and how wonderful it's going to be, I'm looking at it going, oh, dear God, I'm seeing a train wreck in action right here.
I mean, any other comments?
Well, yeah, I think what we're hearing a little bit here is that Ballmer had some wins and had some losses, right?
Yeah.
He is a little bit Microsoft under his stewardship, and I think we all fall into the trap of saying Ballmer did this and Ballmer did that when Ballmer really just directed people. But under his stewardship, they've had some big wins like Xbox, like Windows XP. Don't forget that was still in development when he took over as CEO. It was not that well received when it first launched, and it became the most beloved version of Windows ever. At the same time, Zune happened, Kin happened, Windows Vista happened. So
did Kin actually stay around long enough to happen?
Yeah, right. It almost happened. And I think what you saw was that Ballmer was able to get his team to come up with some great ideas and not avoid the bad ideas, and they need focus. And if you read his letter today, he said, my first thought was we need to have someone take over in the middle of this devices and services transition. That's what Microsoft wants to become, a devices and services company. But then he realized, you know what? We shouldn't switch CEOs midstream on that transition. We should do it now. And I think he's admitting, I'm not the right guy to bring focus to this company with a transition. Let's figure out who that is and let them take the ball from here.
I agree. I think that's exactly what he's saying there. I would love, though, to have been in the boardroom meeting where this discussion happened. I envision it going down one of two ways. Either it starts with Steve going, you know, I've been looking at where we've been and where we're headed, and I think this is the right time to make a transition to a new CEO so that we have someone at the helm that can lead us through the transition from where we are into being a products and service company. The other way it could have gone was they're in the boardroom meeting and the board says, you know, Steve, we've been thinking this is a good time for a transition. And we think that we need someone that can lead the company through the move into a software and services company. So let's go ahead and figure out how to tell the public you're not going to be CEO anymore.
I can shed a little light on that. Mary Jo Foley spoke to Steve Ballmer this morning, and she's got a piece up at allaboutmicrosoft.com. She asked him that question, whose idea was this? And Ballmer said, I told Bill I wanted to do this now, and he said he would support me.
Okay.
I'll support you in leaving.
You know, it still leaves a little room for interpretation.
Yeah, right? You hold the knife, I'll push.
Yeah, but still, if the impetus for the change in leadership came from Ballmer, then I have to give him quite the hat tip, because it's very clear he loves this company. He lives, breathes, and bleeds Microsoft.
It's the only job he's ever had.
And well, that's true. It is the only job he's ever had, and it does make for a nice resume, although short. But if it really did start with him and there wasn't pressure from the board, then I think that says a lot about Steve Ballmer, and I have some new respect for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've done my fair share of Ballmer bashing over the years, especially after the monkey jumping incident. But but every time I've looked down the list of accomplishments, there's a certain thought in me that the tech journalist business just wants to hate Ballmer first and then thinks about trying to be slightly objective thereafter. And I looked down a list today of things that Ballmer's done since he took over, and it started in 1975, founded the organisation between Allen and Gates. 1980, Ballmer's officially hired as CEO, of business manager, 5-10% take on a £50,000 target. He goes all the way down, and the biggest accomplishment that's in 2013 is announces he'll retire in 2014. And that was on our website that I just thought, That kind of sums up the fact that the journalistic market within tech wants to hate Ballmer.
I think that's a really important point, actually, because I think what he didn't have a lot of PR charm, did he?
No.
I think he was awful
on the stage.
Exactly. He was awful on the stage. I think it was very hard for those of us who like tech, and remember he was a direct competition to Steve Jobs for a lot of his time as CEO, and it was very hard for us to warm to him, and I think that was a huge problem. And I think in a way that's one of the biggest problems of his down, because he is doing good stuff, but no one sort of could believe he's doing good stuff. And
go ahead. Who said something there? There's a lot of...
Oh, I kind of jumped on top of Charlotte. And sorry about that.
Okay. Finish off, Charlotte.
I was just going to say, I thought the greatest successes of his sort of era were actually the way that Xbox has become just so dominant. And that's really the one area in which Microsoft has become a massive market lead. You know, they're on the Xbox and the Xbox platform. People really are trying to catch up with Microsoft. Whereas I don't think... Even in enterprise is shifting slightly towards Apple now as well. I mean, XP is still the most dominant, OS in the world, but people are sort of shifting to Apple, and Apple OS is a bit, even in the enterprise market. But in gaming, Microsoft is still absolutely ruling the roost.
Well, I mean, if you look at most secondary systems and service systems, they're running on Windows CE, mate. I would say that's probably the largest OS in distribution in the world.
Yeah.
Because all of your boards in airlines, all of your things that tell the time on the platform, in the trains,
sure,
you know, and that kind of stuff, they're all on CE.
I love collecting blue screens of death on stuff like that, because there's always one advertisement or timetable board or something that just happened to have a kernel panic or something.
Jeff, what were you going to say?
I remember now.
Too long ago.
it's all right. Short-term memory and sparkle days. So one of the big problems I see is that there's this this perception, whether it's right or wrong, that Microsoft has been successful in spite of Steve Ballmer as opposed to because of Steve Ballmer.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's a point from Belts in the chat room. Tech journalists are starting to treat Tim Cook the same way that they've started to treat him, that they did treat Tim Ballmer. But Ballmer has been more flamboyant, therefore an easier target, perhaps. Tom, what's your view on journalists just want to, or you know, they want to hate Ballmer?
Yeah, I think Ballmer has I think Sinofsky actually generated more hate than Ballmer. You just probably didn't hear about it as much because Sinofsky didn't reign supreme for very long before he left. But Ballmer is a volatile guy. He gets angry. He shouts at people. But at the same time, I know a lot of journalists who say, at the end of the day, I like him though. He's a funny guy and he does try to do some good things. So it's a mixture. It's a mixed feeling towards him. I also think that Microsoft itself has just been a big target for a long time. And so there's a reaction to say, we need to take them down a peg. They, especially in the late 90s and early part of the 2000s, were a bit arrogant and abusive of their power. And that's why you had those lawsuits against them and everything like that. And it engendered a lot of negative feelings. So, yeah, it's almost the journalists wouldn't be doing their job if they weren't being adversarial towards a company like that. And then it becomes inertia after a few years.
I mean, Windows did lack cool. If you look at the CSIs of the early 2000s and that kind of stuff, you know, I don't believe for one second that any police departments in the US are equipped entirely with Apple. But they were because it looked cooler on the television. So therefore, the media battle was being lost as well as.
But Windows 7 was a brilliant operating system.
Still is.
We diss Windows 8 because it's not been adopted as well. Vista was a nightmare. But Windows 7 was a fantastic kind of phoenix from the ashes of a bad operating system. And the enterprise has taken it up. I work in enterprise. And it has been adopted really well. And it's a really good operating system. So I think that as a result of kind of taking on board of their failings was actually fantastic. And I think it's probably the best operating system they've ever released.
I mean, does Windows 8 also suffer a little bit from the fact that it was touchscreen devised rather than mouse and keyboard devised?
Yeah, well, it doesn't work on a screen with the keyboard and the mouse, especially if you've got a 27-inch display. It doesn't work.
Well, it works. You just have to go to the desktop, which is annoying.
Yeah.
Right? And if you don't reboot that often, you barely notice it, honestly. But every time you do, or every time you hit some weird program that only exists in the tiled interface, you're suddenly reminded, oh, right, there's this weird clunky thing added onto my desktop that I never use.
Yeah, and then there's RT on top of that, where people got confused because Office on an RT tablet drops into desktop. I don't know why there wasn't a Metro version of Office for RT. If it drops into desktop, you think, I'm in my desktop. I'll install something. You can't. And people weren't educated into how that was going to work. So they were never actually going to get a grip of it. I'm sure a lot of RT tablets probably returned to the shop because people said, I can't install the apps I want.
I feel a demo coming on, Tom, now.
Nah, I forgot to charge it. That's how long it's going to use it.
Well, that's the summary right there.
I think that's the demo, actually. Right.
Go on, Charlotte. I really don't get the touchscreen laptop thing at all. It really does not appeal to me. I love my tablet, and I love my iPad.
Oh, we've lost Charlotte. She's gone into choppy vision. And right, now she's quiet.
But I don't understand why Windows would. I was just saying I don't understand why Apple would. Windows would produce a laptop that is based around touch. No one wants to sit there like some zombie touching their laptop screen.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's an awful lot of things where I find myself reaching for me screen. I want to do something, and I want to dab something, and I want to start something. I just instinctively, my hand goes out now an awful lot because I spend a lot of time with a tablet, with me iPad Mini open. I would love
a Lenovo laptop that was Windows 8 and had a touchscreen, and it was handy sometimes when you're like, ugh, that little trackpad is a little clunky, and I can just reach up and touch it. occasionally I found, to my own surprise, because I didn't think I would feel this way, that it turned out to be useful.
And that would grow as applications developed to suit that interface, because the interface was there to fulfill, rather than at the moment, there's not a lot of touchscreen laptops out there of decent price.
No, but it's fine until you boot into desktop mode and the desktop hasn't been adapted to touch. It's still touching tiny little cursors and crosses and all of that sort of thing. They haven't adapted it at all. So why have the desktop on a touchscreen interface when you actually can't use it? Because we've got a few Lenovo Yogas at work and you can't use a desktop with touch. Yeah. It's meant to be optimized and it doesn't work and it confuses people.
I think
it's crippling.
There's a certain element as well that, I mean, I've certainly seen it with the Nokias the last couple of weeks using them. I got a 920 and a 925. And immediately, as soon as I picked up the 920, I was like, oh, okay, and put it down. And then I opened the 925. I never looked at the 920 again because it looked to me like it was the beta device. They've taken a beta device, shoved it into production just to get something out there. And there's a bit of Windows 8. They've kind of gone with what they've got, which it's, you know, an enhanced Windows 7, but the touch isn't there, the hardware's not there, and they've still gone and produced it anyway. And that's a fault of a CEO, letting stuff out that's not ready.
Yes. And yes, I agree completely. And I also think it's the job of the CEO at some point to say, who thinks really that the way we're putting this interface together in such a clunky way is good? This is crap. Go back and fix it. And Steve should have been saying that, but he wasn't. And
it's because the premise of the interface is good, but the application's wrong.
Right. Well, and he's a marketing guy. He's not a tech guy. So I think from his perspective, there was nothing wrong with it. They had the one ring of interfaces. And he was fine with that. And I have to assume that someone somewhere along the food chain at Microsoft was looking at what they were doing and saying, you know, this is a really bad idea. We need to figure out a better way to make this work. And either they were afraid to say something or they said something and were immediately shot down.
Okay. I've had a request.
It's like classic Windows when they'll make the decision to say, all right, we're going to have Windows RT work differently because the processor works differently. So we're going to have the desktop and it's going to run Office, but nothing else. But we're not going to allow the tablet. We're not going to do a Windows 8 tablet edition. We're going to make Windows 8 tablet work the same so it confuses the hell out of people. And on top of that, we're going to put the tablet interface and force people to use it on the desktop to reduce confusion. It totally increased confusion. What I feel like they should have done is, here's Windows 8 desktop version. Maybe the tile interface is in there as an option, but it's not default. You don't know it's there otherwise, and it works the way you expect it to work. And then Windows 8 tablet version should have just been the tile interface. This is our tablet operating system. It wouldn't have been any less functional than the iPad or Android, and people would have loved it, I think.
And the separation is no different than OS X. And...
No, exactly. That's Apple have OS X and iOS. You don't expect to install an OS X app on a iOS device, but you could be confused installing a Windows Pro app on a RT device. And that's where the confusion is.
Mm. I mean, I think Tom has hit the nail completely on the head, but Tom, why do you think they didn't do that? Why did they not take, you know, see what Apple and Android have been so successful with and follow that model?
They say we wanted to reduce confusion and have one operating system for everything, so you didn't have to think about it. It would be Windows 8 everywhere, except it's not. It's entirely confusing because it doesn't work that way.
To be fair as well, I think there was a lot of discussion about iOS and OS X mirroring each other extremely closely. And you saw Launchpad come out, and there's Launchpad now looking very iOS-like. And I think that scared Microsoft into thinking that they needed a unified operating system, because it all happened just after Launchpad was given.
And they want Windows Phone to be unified with this. They're working towards that as well.
I think they thought that OS X and iOS was going to be far more unified than it currently is.
Yeah.
My thought. So there we go. It's a split panel. I got a casting vote, and I sat on the fence. Sorry.
It's a hung parliament.
It's a hung parliament. $20 million would have seen them home, but Ubuntu Edge has fallen. $20 million short. They raised $12.8 million, which when you're $12.8 million in, and you're 20 million short, you've got to see yourself as having asked a little bit much, perhaps. The CEO did say, I took away from it, that it is the largest crowdfunding amount ever raised. But that's fine, because they all get their money raised back. Well, no, they got $12,809,906. I want to know who gave them the $6.
But they don't get to keep it.
And a washer, maybe, as well. Yeah. Or and a drachma. What would Ubuntu Edge have given us if it had come? And will it still come, or is it forever lost now?
It was a bad promise, because they were promising hardware that is now. Because if you look at the website, they were comparing it against iPhone 5 and the Samsung GS4, and they were going to deliver it next May. So they were promising hardware that may have rivaled hardware that's now, but by the time it was released, we'd have a new iPhone and probably a new Galaxy S5 on the way. Why would you invest in that?
Good point. Good point. Anyone else disappointed or excited? Or
I backed it. I wanted one. I wanted to try it. I mean, okay, so talk about your cross-platform, right? If you install an app on the Ubuntu Edge, it's the same app that you would install on a laptop or a desktop, because it's running the same version of Ubuntu. Mm. And it dual-booted into Android, so you could use all your Android apps and use it as an Android phone if you wanted. But Mark Shuttleworth has said he considers this a success, because the point was not to raise the money and fund the phone right now, although that would have been a fantastic side benefit, and they wanted that to happen. The main point of this was to raise awareness of what Ubuntu could be used for, and maybe turn the heads of some manufacturers to realize, wow, there is $12 million worth of interest out there. Maybe if we got behind it and made a subsidized version, we could actually raise a lot, you know, sell a lot of these things. And that will be the test of whether this worked or not, is if he gets some manufacturers to sign on and use the operating system.
I mean, there's a point here in the chat room where they're saying the Edge was a great-looking phone, but could they still make the phone maybe with $12 million? And Belt says, who wanted a phone that you could use desktop as a desktop system? This was one of the points I was making last week on the Mac show, and one of the guys made the point in the Google community. He was saying, oh, come on, people, you know, it's just a phone. It's not a phone anymore. The phone market has got virtually nothing to do with phones anymore. And that was where this would come in, surely.
Yeah. But the point is, you know, they're saying, you know, it boots into a desktop operating system, but it's Linux. People don't know, the public don't know what that is. Windows have released a phone, and that's not taking off either. So how is that going to take off if people, you know, a well-renowned operating system like Windows against something like Linux, how is that going to take off?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It would have been nice to have seen another competition to Android, because this would have been a free OS, in inverted commas, with lots of expandability and developer relations that would have been far more experimental and open, which would have been fantastic, wouldn't it? But
I'm truly intrigued at the idea of having a monitor and a lap and a keyboard and mouse and plugging in my phone and starting to use it. You know, that idea of having a true multitasking system on your phone that could work that way. Maybe it would have been a nightmare, you know, maybe the processor wouldn't have been able to handle it and it wouldn't have worked as well as I want it to. But that idea of one device, I think, is pretty appealing.
But Motorola tried it with the Atrix as well, didn't they?
Yeah, but the Atrix had some wonky way of doing it where it wasn't really running the same operating system. When you plugged it in, it had this Firefox desktop version that you operated in. Ubuntu would have just been Ubuntu. No compromises.
If people need to use that operating system, then... Yeah, but people need to be more exposed to Linux and Ubuntu before they... Because a lot of people don't know what it is. That's the problem.
I mean, there's a point from Belts in the chat room here, which I think I'm reading as, the real issue is that the Linux desktop is still not here. Linux is still constantly being developed. It's constantly playing catch-up. It never seems to work as well as the established operating systems. There's no diversity. There's hardware lacking. There's functionality lacking with it. It's always playing catch-up.
It is the most successful operating system in the world right now, because Android is Linux.
I mean,
we tend to want to say, well, that's different because it's Android, but it is Linux.
Well, cash registers run on Linux a lot of the time, and stock control systems run on Linux.
The second to Windows CE on embedded systems
exactly.
is Linux.
Yeah, absolutely. But it didn't capture the imagination on the desktop, and it didn't capture the hardware on the desktop. Go ahead, Paul.
It is a really good operating system. Every time they release a new version, I try it. It is a really good operating system. It works on nearly all systems. But because there's that lack of education about what it is, people aren't going to go out and go, well, I've got Windows, yeah, they get Windows on their laptop or their PC. They're not going to go and try it. That's the problem. They don't know what it is. And I think that is the major issue. The education in the public isn't there, so no one's actually going to give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, there's an awful lot of people in Britain. If you ask them what Ubuntu was, they think it was a sexual practice.
Yeah,
especially when they see the icon.
I think their biggest problem, they were asking for too much money for a product that was never really going to have mainstream recognition, and that's why they fell short. You know, amazing to have raised $12 million, but actually, if you want something it's a product, it's going to be a bit like the Pebble, I think, probably used by enthusiasts and geeks and people like that. And if you can't make a product like that for less than $20 million, you're really in trouble from the start.
It's a lot of money. I mean, you look
at it's a huge amount of money.
iPhone development as well. $12 million probably is a spit in the ocean.
Yeah. Do we know what the total investment of Windows Phone is? Because I'm sure it's well in advance of $12 million.
And it's only that's a pretty safe
easily.
Exactly. And it's only penetrated 3% of the market. So what chances do they have?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I mean, the Nokia phone I had last week was great. It was wonderful. The Windows Phone app in the Mac App Store is beautiful, and it's effortless to do your syncing. But when it comes down to it, it's never going to be a widely used system because most people know the name Nokia, but I don't believe that many people in the high street would know that Nokia now runs Windows. They've lost that ability to convey the fact that the Windows name is part of the Nokia name now.
Well, if you look at the way Nokia is marketing their phones, they're making what looks to me to be a very concerted point to not mention Windows in their advertising.
Yes.
I haven't seen any mention of Microsoft in any of Nokia's ads.
Yeah. When they did their last keynote for the camera phone they just released, apparently it took them more than 25 minutes to mention Windows Phone.
And it was probably just in passing.
Exactly, in the same way that Samsung doesn't really mention Android when they do their keynotes.
There's a great point here in the chat room from Mr. C. He says, why didn't they just make the OS and then let people stick it on their Android phone anyway?
They are. You can do that.
So you already can do that?
And you see how many people are flocking to do it.
Is that really the servers down?
That it's easy to get caught up in the fact that they didn't make their funding. And I think what the Ubuntu did was not set a funding level that would help them get started. They set a funding level. They're like, this would be worth doing in a run on our own. But they've said very clearly, we don't really want to make the phone ourselves. We want to license the operating system support and give the operating system away for free to manufacturers to make, just like Google is. And don't forget, nobody can break up into a market until they break into the market. When iOS came along and when Android came along, everyone said, you can't unseat Symbian, you can't unseat BlackBerry. Mm-hmm. They're too dominant. No one's ever going to bust in. And they did. There have been plenty of other examples of operating systems that haven't busted into it. And I'm not saying Ubuntu is a lock for it, but certainly possible. And what they need is manufacturer support. Then they need marketing support, and that's one of the problems Microsoft, I feel, has had, is getting that marketing support. And those are tall orders. I'm not saying they're easy. But those are the things to look at to see if this is successful, not just the fact that it got funded or not. They knew they were going after enthusiasts with this Kickstarter or Indiegogo.
Wes has got the title of the podcast, Flocking. Well done, Wes.
I'm sure that has some sort of urban dictionary meaning as well.
Now that you've just made me think there, what you said about BlackBerry, one of the things we didn't do at the end of the Balmer story is take bets on who's going to be taking over. So who is stepping into the bald man's shoes?
Well, are you implying Jim Lazaridis and Mike Balsillie are available?
Oh, hell no. I'm thinking Torsten.
Ah, interesting.
Nah, see, that's a left field pick, but you reckon?
Scott Forstall.
Forstall. No, seriously, come on. What's the sweep going to be on this? Tom Merritt is taking over at Microsoft this Christmas in the chat room.
Yeah, right. Christmas keeps pushing that in the chat room.
Yeah.
If nominated, I will not
Tom Merritt for president.
If elected, I will not serve. Who would want that challenge is what I want to know.
I love it.
Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theroux about this morning, and Mary Jo thinks it's Tony Bates. He's the Skype guy that came in, and he just got a promotion in the last reorg. He's sort of an odds-on favorite. And the other one is an engineer whose name is now suddenly escaping me, but I'll come up with it.
So you're going firmly on the internal.
Internal.
No external.
And ZDNet has a good short list for this, but it's Satya Nadella. He's the executive vice president of cloud and enterprise. Those two seem to be the early favorites internally.
I don't want to know what's on their list, Tom. I want to know what's on your list.
Bring Bill back, I guess. I don't know.
Chris says Marissa Meyer. They're
half jokingly.
Go on then.
Meg Whitman.
Oh
no.
I could totally see her looking at Microsoft and going, you know, I was dealt a crap deal here at HP, and I've made a pretty good go of it. Let's go see what we can stir up at Microsoft.
Mm. Yep. I never got my touchpad.
Come on, we've got to have a suite that you think is the name. So, Charlotte, pick a name.
Oh, pick a name. I really like the Meg Whitman idea. I don't think I can beat Meg Whitman. I think that's a fantastic one.
However unlikely.
Well, I think stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Ballmer got to run Microsoft, so there you go.
Yeah.
Chat room's left field suggestion is Eric Schmidt.
Yeah, I've heard that one a couple of times. Ooh. That's not going to happen, but intriguing.
The ghost of Steve Jobs.
Oh. Good right now.
Be about as effective as Ballmer. Julie Green. I've no idea who she is.
Are they talking about Julie Larson Green? She's a VP. She's kind of an up-and-comer. She does a lot of the demos. I'll tell you what. I think it's going to be Satya Nadella.
Okay.
I think Tony Bates is a good call, too. But it's going to be picked by Bill Gates. He's on the selection committee. And it's going to. And Satya is an engineer, and they want an engineering mind. Bill's going to want an engineering mind to focus them on services and devices. I think Satya is probably the one that's going to happen. But the crazy idea... name, the sort of off the register name, maybe Eric Schmidt, who knows?
Do you think that's a feasible outside chance?
No. I don't think they're going to bring somebody from outside. I really don't.
I don't think they'll bring someone from outside.
Don't you think they could do with someone from outside, though?
Oh, yeah, I think it'd be great for them, but I don't think they're going to allow that. I don't think they're going to risk that.
No.
They should.
Oh, no. I'm going to go with Torsten Hines just on the basis that probably no one else is going to pick that name, and I'm going to get a good return on my money at the bookies. So, because I'm going to get 1,000 to 1 on him easily. Put 20 quid down. 20 grand. Thank you very much.
Reed Hastings has been bandied about, but apparently Microsoft tried to hire him before.
So they might try harder now, then.
CEO of Netflix, if people don't know.
Yeah. That'd be good. Bradley Manning is starting 35 years.
Oh, I thought you were going to suggest he would be CEO of Microsoft.
Well, he's got as good a chance as Torsten Hines has.
I suppose.
he can keep a secret, not. US soldier Bradley Manning is serving 35 years in jail for handing over thousands of confidential government documents. The 25-year-old is likely to get out on 10 years for parole if he behaves himself. I mean, he's... I think he's been... I don't know. I look at the one side of the story and I think it's been really harshly treated, and this is kind of a shock sentence and it'll get reduced on appeal. And then there's a bit of me like, well, yeah, he sold his country out. Whether you agree with what your country's done or not, you know, you did sign up to say you weren't going to tell anyone and you did. Americans, what's it feel like to have Bradley Manning and the NSA?
You know, the part that stings out of all of this for me, because he did break the law, right or wrong, in releasing the information. He did break the law, so there's that. What about all of the illegal activities that he exposed when he did that? What's happening to those people? And the answer, as far as I can tell, is nothing. Yeah. So the people that were blatantly breaking the law are getting away with everything they did, while the guy that exposed them... is taking the fall. I would like to see some prosecution of people that were breaking the law and were exposed through this.
Didn't the people in the video, I think the soldiers involved in the video were court-martialed.
Seconds up.
Yeah, I believe there's a handful of people that were, but there's...
You're completely right. Not enough people have ended up... They used Bradley Manning as a cover to... Chelsea Manning as a cover to not deal with what the actual issues that he exposed were, and that's pretty poor. I feel a bit sick by this whole story, actually. I think the way that Bradley Manning was treated, locked up in a cell, basically left to rot on his own until he confessed, is pretty horrific.
For a civilised society. For a civilised society, you've got to say, I mean, you judge a society based on how it treats its criminals. Most definitely.
I agree.
The facts that they are reporting at this point are verified, had 8 people who received shorter sentences than Bradley Manning for spying.
Actually, for people
who gave the Soviets intelligence or handed over plans for the Gulf War buildup to Jordan before the Gulf War or classified information given to the Russian intelligence services, all got less than 35 years. Bradley Manning was made an example of because they didn't like WikiLeaks and they didn't like that this information, particularly, which was embarrassing, was made public. It wasn't just that he leaked classified information. It was the emotional reaction to it. And that's why he was put in solitary.
A lot of people agree with Charlotte.
Scumbag,
sorry.
And the biggest scumbag in all of this is Julian Assange, who is hiding out here in London and not taking responsibility and left his source to rot. And that is a disgrace, the way Assange has behaved.
Is WikiLeaks really about Assange anymore, though, particularly? Because, I mean, he's been ineffective. I mean, he's locked in a room that smells of his own piss at the minute in the Bolivian embassy. It's not exactly like he's active.
Edward Snowden has really kind of showed up WikiLeaks lately.
Yeah.
In the leaking area.
Yeah.
But as Tom mentions, there are 5 or 6 people who have sold secrets to KGB, Russia, Soviet Union, and they haven't got half the sentence that Bradley Manning has got. And they didn't actually serve the whole sentence. Some people had the sentence reduced to 10 years, you know, and revealing blueprints of US embassies and identities of undercover agents, you know, that's really damaging stuff. He didn't release it to the enemy, he released it to the public.
Do you know what's really missing in all of this stuff at the moment that's going on? There's no bridges. There's no Brandenburg Gate. There's no long walk where you let your 2 men go and they cross and you exchange them. That's the kind of sexy visual imagery that this kind of stuff needs now.
Oh, like James Bond.
You do. You need the long walk. You need the Brandenburg Gate and the big bridge. And what was the bridge? What's the bridge? The famous bridge where they let them swap Russians and the Germans or the US. That's what you need.
We're seeing, I think, how absolutely freaked out the state is by these guys. I mean, when I'm talking to people, when I'm talking to my new sort of political sources, the level of technical incompetence I find is absolutely frightening. And these are people, you know, and it's absolutely frightening how little technical understanding of what is going on in the political, from the political consequences. And these acts are innately political. This is not really a tech story. This is a politics story.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no one down at Starbucks is talking about Bradley Manning. If you ask the average American who Bradley Manning was, they'd reckon he was on Dancing in the Stars.
Oh, I don't know.
How many, Jeff, you are the man for Starbucks tales.
Correct.
How many people down Starbucks are talking about Bradley Manning?
Okay, to
or in Myers.
I'm not hearing that name come up at all when I'm at Starbucks.
I'm not hearing Starbucks come up. I don't know.
You know, the cashier at Myers doesn't know who Bradley Manning is. 249 million of the 260 million US citizens are disengaged from who he is. To a large degree.
Yeah, I think Edward Snowden has overshadowed Bradley Manning quite a bit, because now when people are thinking about leaks and spies and all of that sort of thing, that is a much more interesting, much more current, and much more relevant story. The idea of someone leaking some military secrets overseas that then get published in embarrassed diplomats doesn't affect your day-to-day life. The idea that everything I send over Gmail is collected by the NSA and could be read by them, suddenly that impacts me directly.
I mean, there is an awful lot of people who are, pointing at Manning and Snowden and saying, this guy's an asshole. But actually not saying, hang on a second, there are 300 instances that have been conducted in the last 12 months where illegally the NSA has spied on US citizens. None of that's getting discussed at the higher levels or on, Today Show.
The government have done a brilliant PR job on it. Both sides of the Atlantic, they've made the debate about Snowden and the person and try to divert it from what these people are telling us.
They've opened a Tumblr account to release declassified documents, for Christ's sake.
What is it? I see...
spy people.
NSAtogo.org.
I see everything. Yeah.
There is a horrific political...
I see on the record.tumblr.com.
I see.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I can't get over how more people are not talking about the fact of... The NSA is spying on its own citizens. That has to be illegal, unconstitutional. I mean, you guys like using that word a lot. Is that not unconstitutional?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, in a decision that was made declassified by a FOIA request from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, determined that one particular method that the NSA was using was, in fact, unconstitutional and ordered them to stop and destroy the records. I think what's happening is we're getting fatigue. Mm. It's almost a disservice that so many leaks are coming out every day that people are starting to get tired of it. And that's unfortunate and awful and something this important, but it's also a fact. I remember when I was interning at NPR and we were covering the atrocities in Yugoslavia and the falling apart Yugoslavia, the news reporters were like, oh, I can't talk about Yugoslavia one more day, which is horrible. People are losing their lives in that situation. But it's just natural human reaction to not be able to deal with something that big constantly. It's almost like we need a break from the onslaught because you start to go, okay, we know they're spying on everything.
I had second thoughts about putting that story in at all into the doc for that very reason. What are we going to talk about? We can't change anything. We might as well just ignore it. Very valid. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. I had dinner with UK2 last night, and there is so much stuff about to happen with them. There's a complete revamp of their website taking place. They're looking at a changing focus in the way that they engage with their customers. I can't say an awful lot more than that. There is a new service that's due out in about 6 weeks that I'm not allowed to talk about, but it'll affect every single customer, and it's a positive effect. It's a brilliant, brilliant idea. That'll all be coming in sort of 4 to 6 weeks' time. I'll tell you in about 3 weeks' time what it is. That's when the embargo kind of runs out, if you like. We've got some joint stuff that we're going to do with them over the next couple of months where they're going to feature BTN and we're going to talk about them. And there's loads and loads of things in the offering. If you like this network, you have to support UK2 because without them, we would disappear, plain and simple. They pick up all our bandwidth. This goes back to when bandwidth was really, really friggin' expensive. We still use an awful lot of bandwidth, and they pick up our server charges. They pick up everything. So you keep us afloat by keeping them afloat. If you'd like to have a look at what services they've got, use the link on our sponsors page and then use our offer codes. They've still got offer codes at the moment for the summer special, and that gets you like 30% off a lot of their services. And we're also talking about some competitions on a regular basis with them as well. So we'll be giving away an awful lot of stuff over the course of the next 12 months with them. So please carry on supporting UK2 because we'd be lost without them. And they're absolutely great people. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And we've got a new sponsor starting next week as well that's really, really good if you're into your printing. I'll tell you more later. Right. Cool things. Madam, Charlotte, do you have a cool thing?
So I've been playing a lot this week with my Raspberry Pi, which I've always liked and never really worked out how I want to use it. What I really wanted was a cheap Linux machine, and I found something that made me literally be able to do that. If you download, I think it's called the Pi Store, which is Raspberry Pi, the Raspbian version of their sort of app store, you can find something called LibreOffice, which gives you a free open source office suite, which is exactly like Word, Excel. It's got a brilliant database program. It's got everything. You can turn your little Raspberry Pi into a full-blown Linux machine, and it's absolutely brilliant. And I have been really using that a lot and playing with it. And it's a really, really great tool. It's a really great service. If you've ever used any Microsoft Office program, you'll use it within 3 seconds. Really easy to install. And it's basically turned it from a little hobby into a proper, fully functioning computer that I can do work and everything else on. It's great.
Excellent. Who lives under a flight path, by the way?
Me.
Oh, that is sweet.
Two as it happens, I think.
To be punctuated by British Airways.
Yeah.
Superb. That's a good pick, mate. Very good pick. Thank you very much. Jeffrey, what do you have for us?
All right. It's no secret that I'm into fitness tech gear. So that's what I have again this week. And this time it's this little thing, which is called the Misfit Shine. And it's a fitness and activity tracker that instead of doing like the Fitbit and the Withings Pulse, what it does is it tracks you more, I'm going to call it more of like a holistic way. So instead of saying you have walked this many steps, you've counted or climbed this many flights of stairs, what it does is it looks at your overall activity and for the day and kind of tracks that. And it's really nice because instead of looking at it from a, oh my God, I need to make 500 more steps or whatever, you're looking at it as, oh yeah, I'm being actually really active today. So that's good. Now, what makes this thing really cool, let me pop it out of the band here. This is the whole little thing. And the entire face is just a single piece of aluminum. And so what you do is double tap the face, and then it will show you
lights
telling you how active you are, and then it shows the current time. Now get this, the way they made that happen was by taking a laser and drilling these little micro holes through the aluminum surface. So the light can pass through, but the holes are small enough that water molecules can't go back in. So it's actually waterproof.
Mm-hmm.
And since there's really nothing on the face, it's just this very clean looking piece. So you can wear it on your wrist. Like here, this is the band that it comes with. So you can put it on your wrist, wear it that way. You can also get like a nicer leather looking wristband for it. And they sell a necklace piece for it. So you could wear it around your neck if you wanted as well. And then it has a little belt clip thing too. And it's really lightweight. It looks really cool. And I like the idea that instead of obsessing over how many steps you've taken each day, it lets you look at things from the bigger picture. Like, am I sitting on my ass too much? Or am I out being active? So
good on you,
that's
mate.
Yeah, so that's the Misfit Shine, and I believe it's $120.
Excellent. Please stick a link in the doc. Good pick. Mr. Paulhams, what have you got for us?
Well, probably something that a lot of people have got already, but it's the new YouTube app for iOS and Android. Updated this week. A couple of little nice little features that I think are fantastic. So if you can see it there, I'm playing a great British tech video there. Probably not for that kind of light.
Tilt it backwards.
Yeah. But
or forwards.
Yeah, but basically, all you have to do is, if you swipe the video down, it basically goes into the corner of your screen, and you can then continue to search for other videos and go through your playlists and all that sort of thing. But if you're fed up with it, you can basically swipe to the left or the right, and it dismisses it. And it's been fantastic that within a very short space of time that an iOS and an Android app have come up. I think they were within hours of each other. And I know that Microsoft and Google have had a bit of a falling out over their YouTube app, but us Android and iOS users have got the latest and greatest. So fantastic. So if you haven't updated, then hit the update button. It's actually a really good feature.
Excellent, mate. And you've just reviewed it, haven't you, in our reviews section?
Yes, I'm filling it up, aren't I?
You are, mate. You're doing a fantastic job. Do not stop.
I will never
stop. We've had more reviews in the last 7 days than we've had in the previous 4 years. So.
Yeah, you told me to slow down. I can't do it.
Nah, just keep going. Full pelt, mate. Stuff everyone.
Cheers,
brilliant, mate. Excellent. Thomas, what do you have for us, sir?
Yeah, this is something that may not appeal to everybody, but if you want to hook up an HD camera to your Mac or your Thunderbolt-enabled PC, actually, I'm using a new thing called the Ultra Studio Mini Recorder from Blackmagic Design. It's about £125, 30 pence at Amazon. That's about the standard price that you'd get it. And I've been using it today. This is it, the Ultra Studio Mini Recorder. It's just this little tiny thing, and it just zoomed in on me. All right, there we go. It's just this little tiny thing. You can throw it in a bag. It's got Thunderbolt on one end and HDMI on the other. And it's about £100 cheaper than the Blackmagic Intensity Extreme, which is what I was using before. And it's a lot more portable. So if you got to do stuff out in the field somewhere, this is a much more inexpensive and durable version. The Intensity Extreme is kind of known for breaking if you tried to take it and throw it in a bag and take it around with you. So the folks I know at Pixel Core have been using this a lot, and they say it's really good. And I found it to be dead simple. You plug it in and it works.
Excellent, Joe. Well done. £125 from Amazon as well, so not bad at all. Not bad at all. My cool thing, my mom and dad's 50th wedding anniversary is very soon, and they wanted their wedding video to be played at the dinner that we're having. So I was like, holy hell. And I found it's on Standard 8, which is the actual thing is that the film is 50 years old, obviously. And I found a place on the net called imemorybox.com. And I spoke to the guy who's there, a guy called Sheldon Barris, who owns it. And he's a lovely, lovely bloke. Very, very helpful. Gave me loads of information on the phone. I took every cine film that my mum and dad had got and boxed it up and shipped it up to him with the parcels to go. And in less than a week, he's done all of the 8mm and sent it back. It does Super 8 as well. It does video and camcorder tapes. It even does your audio cassettes. If you've got one of those and you can't play it anymore, all your mixtapes from the 70s and 80s, send it up to him and he'll record it and send it back. Now, here's the best thing. The Super 8 cine film has come back. And because it's cine film, you can do almost anything you like with it. He's cleaned the films and he's recorded them all in HD because his little machine records all of your Super 8 and 8mm cine film in HD, and it only costs 10 pence a foot. So,
Ewan?
It's not bad at all. Yes, mate?
What are you talking about?
Have you ever seen a black piece, a black vinyl disc with a hole in the middle?
Yeah, I like them.
Right. So a mixtape, is that the bit you don't understand, or Super 8 and 8mm?
Yeah.
Right, you can't tell me you haven't watched 8mm, the film.
No.
Right, go and watch 8mm, the film, and come back to me.
Right.
No, 8mm and Super 8 were cine films that were available to consumers, and they were tiny. I mean, the actual frame size is about 8mm across. It's really tiny. And it's film. Thank you, Bookery. Is it film, says Bookery in the chat room.
My mind is blown.
Yeah, no, 8mm film. It's not great quality, but it is film, so your ability to blow it up and then... she's walked away from me. I'm explaining it to her, and she walks away from me.
Enough of you.
Oh, she's proving she understands vinyl.
Aha.
Right. Now, what about wax? What about wax cylinders?
Sorry, what?
No. So anyway, if you're a 50-year-old and you've got some cine film, iMemoryBox.com charges 10 pence a foot to transfer it, and I've taken all of the films that my dad had and sent it off to him, and he sent them back in less than a week. Apparently, if you want Super 8, you've got to wait a bit longer, because they've got about 4 machines that do Super 8, and they're all absolutely chock-full, and they've only got one machine that does Standard 8, and it never does anything. So that's why I got mine back in a week. Thank you, Sean. Sheldon, even. Let's get it wrong again. Sheldon Barris. Thanks, mate. iMemoryBox.com. Really nice people. Really nice people. Where can we get a hold of you? Charlotta.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry on Twitter. I write for Jeff at the Mac Observer. I write for The Wall UK. And I run the blogs digitalpolitico.net and virtuallynaked.co.uk.
Excellent. Jeffrey, where are you, sir?
I'm at macobserver.com, and I am on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamet, both places. You can find me on tons of podcasts. Apple Context Machine, we have communicators here for this show and the comic show, sometimes the Mac show. And, I'm like everywhere, it seems, lately. Also, go check out Fresh Brew Tales. That's where I talk about coffee shops and all the crazy things I see there. And I have to do a totally gratuitous plug. If anyone happens to be in Denver on September 18th, please come and see me. I'm going to be speaking at Ignite Denver, and it's going to be an absolutely awesome evening. And apparently they have enough sponsors that the event will be completely free. So there you go. You won't even have to pay to see me speak. So.
You need to explain what Ignite Denver is, because at the moment it sounds like a meeting of the Ku Klux Klan. What's Ignite Denver about?
They're arsonists.
Yeah, they're arsonists. Okay, so Ignite is an event that happens in cities all around the world. And what they do is they get a bunch of people together that speak for 5 minutes, 5 minutes at a pop on whatever topic that they have chosen to speak on. But it's structured. So when you start speaking, your slideshow starts. And every 15 seconds, your slides will advance all the way up to the end. So it's 5 minutes long. And you have no control over your slides. They will just progress. And you have to make your presentation happen. And if something goes wrong, you have to figure out a way to fix it, because your slides aren't going to stop for you. So you get these really good topics from people that are very passionate about what they're talking about. But you have the added twist of, they have no control over the slides in their presentation. They will just simply go, and regardless of what happens, 5 minutes later, you are done.
Oh, good. And on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, Jeff will be wrestling wolves.
As one does.
As one does. In Starbucks.
Right.
Paul, where are you, mate?
Well, you'll find me on Twitter at Paul Ums. And writing for the greatest network on the internet, which is the British Tech Network.
I love you. I'm not going to make any jokes about you and your sister anymore. Tom's just put in the chat room, California's flammable.
It is, man, especially Southern California, where I just moved in January. Everything's on fire. Yosemite's on fire right now.
Yeah, that's a shame, because that's a nice place by the looks.
Yeah, it is.
I've never been, but the film was good. Tom, where are you, mate?
TomMerritt.com, 2 R's, 2 T's. That's where I collect all the stuff that I do, all the shows that I do. You can subscribe to there. I just started a newsletter, email newsletter, if you're interested. Click on About over there and sign up for that. Also have a chronology of tech history and a couple novels, MerrittBooks.Squarespace.com. And, of course, Tech News Today, every morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. UK time, at live.twit.tv, all the time, twit.tv/TNT.
And Sword and Laser, you say that?
Oh, yeah, Sword and Laser. We skipped our episode this week because we've got an interview we want to do, and we want to wrap up a book next week. And then we're going to be at Dragon Con. It's Science Fiction and Fantasy Book Club, swordandlaser.com.
You need to come on our comic show.
I do, actually. I'd love to do that. That'd be fun.
Yeah, because we've got Carlos Esquer on soon. And you did. Who did you do this week, Jeff?
We did David Peterson, the guy that does Mouse Guard. And Tom, if you want to be on, absolutely.
Because you kickstarted a comic which won, unlike Ubuntu Edge.
Yeah, we set our goal quite a bit below theirs, and we were able to fund it. Yeah, that is out to backers. All first three issues are out, and we've submitted it to the Comixology app. So hopefully it'll get approved there soon. It takes them forever to approve stuff.
Well, now's the time to get your ass onto the comic show, mate, and plug.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? As soon as the comic is actually available for wide release, like for people to buy. That would, I would definitely come.
The other guy, the artist that you did it with, get him on as well.
Yeah, good. Len.
Brilliant. We'll do that. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again with The Big Show next week. I think we're going to do Thursday, if that's all right with everyone. But I have pulled some work, unfortunately, on Thursday. So whether I'm going to make it back or not is a different question. And the cat's just jumped, the cat's just jumped on the sound desk, which means that one of you may not have sound anymore, so we better go. See you next week. Thanks for listening. I can't believe that actually stayed up after we restarted. How cool was that?
It worked!
Amazing!